was to gradually cooperate to protect it, to make sure that it lived by not abusing it, to make sure that we had what we need tomorrow because we were thoughtful and thrifty today. The reason also is now, perhaps in Ken's thinking, what is happiness? What do we have to do to be really happy? Well, one of the first problems of being happy is to keep out of trouble. All kinds of trouble deduct from happiness and make it less and less possible for us to live happy and cheerful lives. Whatever causes unhappiness, that is contrary to nature's will and purpose, must be corrected. Therefore, to be happy, we must be right. We must do the things we are supposed to do. We must have the attitudes that protect us. It is the same thing with health as with happiness. As long as the individual breaks the rules of mental and emotional health, his physical health will suffer. A natural, healthy life, well balanced, with dedications to principles, and with sincere fulfillment of all the duties of mutual assistance. This is the answer to the future as well as to the past. Since Penn left us, the world has shrunk considerably. The world he knew was very sparsely civilized in comparison to our world. And yet in this world, instead of increasing in cooperation, we are intensifying competition in the presence of dwindling resources. We are being as selfish as we can, almost as though we realized that one of these days we wouldn't have anything more to be selfish about. We are perpetuating the ways of least resistance, sacrificing the future of our own lives, our children, and our world for a few immediate advantages. This is contrary to the Quaker way of life. And the Quaker has a rightness about his way which has been widely recognized and admired. The person who has the right attitude will not sacrifice the values of life for some passing amusement. He will not do the things which will destroy himself simply because he enjoys doing them for a little while. The long-range practical fact is this. There are two kinds of selfishness. Short-range selfishness is get as much as you can for yourself quick. Long-range selfishness is to give as much as you can at all times because in the end you're protecting yourself. The long-range selfishness is the kind that we are overlooking. Now we have today revolutions and all kinds of disturbances. We have tyrannies and atrocities and terrorists everywhere. If we go carefully into this situation, we realize that all of these troubles are hung from a few basic faults that we have allowed to encourage and increase. Some of our most difficult situations arise from political theories. These political theories have victory or have success marked on them. They are demanded, so to say. But the real problem of politics is not who shall own all. The product is, the real purpose of product is to policy is to say no one shall be without. Now this is a complete reversal, and yet we are facing it. And we're going to fight it out for as long as we can. We're going to make as much as we can, but we're also going to finally probably find that the value simply fades out of the things we are holding in our hands. The dollar we are clutching is only going to be worth 2 cents pretty soon. But and we go on. Ken said, this isn't right. This is a complete abuse of our religion. It is a complete misunderstanding of government. It is completely outside of intelligence and integrity so far as daily labor is concerned. We have got to either change our ways or nature will change them violently, because nature must be obeyed. Now, when something comes along, we are inclined to think the deity has been very unkind to us. But we do not think of how often we have betrayed the divine principle in ourselves. Now, Penn, working along, found other little things that made a kind of an interesting viewpoint for everyone concerned. He brought printing to this country very strongly. He laid the foundation for another great Philadelphian who was to follow him, Benjamin Franklin. And he was also a man of such basic integrities that he had a strong influence with other countries and other rulers. Unfortunately, Penn did not live most of his life in this colony. He had to go back to England, and in the closing years of his life, he was struck down by paralysis and passed on in the year 1718. But in the meantime, he had left the work he had to do, and many of the greatest historians on record give the unadulterated admiration for the things that he attempted and the one principal basis upon which he labored. Cutting away everything else, Penn believed that we must obey truth. And Penn, and for the Quakers who were with him, Sermon on the Mount was the truth. This is more true than any scientific discovery that can ever be made. This is more true than any political structure that can ever be conceived. This is more true than all the medicine that we can develop. Everything that we have depends upon the simple truths that are presented in the Sermon on the Mount. To obey these, to bring them into our personal lives, is not always easy. But it's the basis of the only enduring utopian commonwealth. There cannot be selfishness in a redeemed society. And society will not redeem itself while selfishness is a basic statement of its purposes. So Penn finally went back to England, where he passed on after a rather difficult life, imprisonment, exile, everything you can think of, but with it all, a realization that we've overlooked probably one of the most important values of life, and that is inner communion. To live constantly in the presence of an inner conviction, not necessarily a vision, though it might be, merely only a tremendous urge, a great deep recognition of value. Beneath all our insincerities, beneath all our mistakes, there is a deep, wonderful ocean of realities. We are all floating on the surface of something bigger than ourselves, and part of that bigness is in ourselves. There is never a time when man, with the equipment that heaven has bestowed upon him, has not been in a condition or a position to solve his problems. He has chosen, however, a short-sighted approach to existence. He has been perfectly willing to multiply his problems in the hope of adding to his profits. And this procedure goes on with hopefulness. Practically every indigent person today lives in the hope that he will be a millionaire in due time. Everyone who has not knows that somehow he's going to get. And in this process, he begins to deify those who have gotten, and the entire system goes to pieces. So the simple problem of religion, we're having a very bad dosage of that at the present moment. Most of the problems that he worked on in Pennsylvania are now spread over the entire human family and are getting more and more complicated every day. Many nations believing in God are murdering each other by the thousand. In the name not only of God, but of a God of mercy, of righteousness, and a God of peace. The God who was to bring joy to the world. But his followers have made certain that he did not bring joy even to themselves because of the things he caused. We are informed, of course, that these are basic problems you cannot solve. You can solve them because there is no one in these different groups who does not hurt, who is not sad, who cannot suffer, who cannot have loss, who cannot see their loved ones destroyed. These things are basic. And while we cover this with a philosophy of loyalties, we are in serious trouble. loyalty is, and to Penn was loyalty to peace, loyalty to truth, and the individual so living that the causes of war were removed from the patterns of social existence. These things can be done, and these things will be done. The great question, of course, is how soon? The answer I think a Penn would give to that is it'll be done when people want it badly enough to live better. Until then, there is no answer. No government can legislate truth. No system of religion has an option on it. All that counts is a mysterious something within ourselves, which is the very innermost part of ourselves. And that part of ourselves is compatible with other human beings. The life locked in each of us dwells in peace with life locked in all others. But we have not allowed this deeper level of unity to correct the surface problems of diversity. We have been willing to allow the lower part of our nature to silence the upper part, and found that by living by that code alone, we seem to have an occasional success. But in the last 2,000 years, we have been seeming to have success, and one look at the world today shows what it has led to. Actually, today, we are trying to struggle to find out how we can survive, let alone to succeed. We have used everything we knew to turn it against our brother for our own profit, and in so doing, have signed our own death warrants. So Penn was quite right that something had to be done. The utopia that we need would be a universal structure. It wouldn't be limited to Pennsylvania. This utopia would be the whole world, gradually waking up to the causes of its own unrest. By allowing institutions to fight to the death for principles that none of them understand. That levels of society forever competing, when all that any of us can ever have in the end is a pile of ashes. So these things must be sometime thought through. There have been other economists, there have been other sociologists who have handled this problem with considerable pressure, but not one of them has had this peculiar experience which Penn calls the holy experiment. This is an experiment based on a revelation, on a kind of an internal certainty, which caused him to believe and know with certainty that he was destined and foreordained to do this job, that he was the one who in the 17th century was to bring a light to a Europe recovering gradually and painfully from the Protestant Reformation and the medievalism which had locked it in hopeless slavery. Penn was aware, however, that slavery is not always what it seems to be. An individual can be a slave and at the same time be very rich. He can be rich because it is the slavery to something that guarantees the wealth. But to be rich in freedom, in perfect ability to live well, to do the kindly things we want to do every day, to accept the fact that we will be abused and misunderstood at times, but that is not our problem. We are to do right. The individual who does wrong to us is his problem, not ours. We must continue always in the spirit of brotherhood, the spirit of common understanding and gentle remonstrance or affirmation. Actually, as probably many of you realize, the Pietists and the various puritanical groups all came here in search of peace. They came here to escape tyrannies. But like in the case of the bubonic plague, many went on ships and out to sea to escape the plague, and found that on the ship with them. Many of those who came over here in search of liberty were unable to bestow it upon their own neighbors. They came over here to have their own rights, but everyone else must obey them. Roger Williams had to leave the colony to save his own life. Every time a theological pressure has been asserted, someone has suffered. And Penn's primary feeling was that the most powerful principle of good in the world is religion, and it has been the most completely profaned. That nothing that is so important should be allowed to be degenerated. And yet the best has become the worst. The very ideas of faith have been exploited into an infinite sectarianism of debating individuals, fighting, struggling, each believing that they alone are right, and persecuting each other in the name of a God of love. This condition, if it continues, takes away from humanity the one true point of strength, the strength that it must have if it is to survive properly. And that strength is the strength of love. Penn was a great believer in love. Love on any level and of any kind, as long as it was honest, sincere, and honorable. He believed definitely that the only answer to hate is love. And that the answer is that we cannot have love simply by having our enemy agree with us. Love to Penn was the great gift that the Messiah had given to the world. It was Christ's blessing and Christ's very self upon us. It was the one thing that could heal all wounds. And everything that compromises it is in some way detrimental to the good. Love, if it is real, is unselfish. It is certain to be laboring for the common good. Love suffereth long and is kind. And love suffereth always in the cause of growth and happiness. Love as a sincere emotion should be the cornerstone of civilization. But instead of that, it has been deprived of its values by a vast structure of ulterior motives. Today, ulterior motives have so invaded human affections that the honesty of affection is no longer certain. Paul Penn says it's going to be that way. It's going to be that way until we change it. But we are endowed at birth and before birth. Our ancestry before us was endowed. The world at its beginnings was endowed with the capacity for redemption. Each evil has within itself its own cure. Each mistake has within it its own truth. In one way or another, everything that we have and know can contribute to the infinite and ultimate victory of right over might, of beauty over hatred, of love over all the dissensions of mankind. It can be done, but it's just too simple. No one wants to get rid of this vast colossus that they themselves have built. But there once in ancient times was a colossal figure of the sun god that stood at the harbor of Rhodes like a great giant. And people came from all over the world to want to venerate and admire this supreme human achievement. In less than 75 years, there was an earthquake and the great image fell. And this glory of the world was finally sold to a second-hand dealer for old metal. Now this is going to tell a story about ourselves. We have built this great and shining thing, which appears to be very good, but is vulnerable throughout. And we are worshiping and enjoying the prestige of being the greatest nation that ever lived, the greatest period in the history of the world, where all questions are going to be solved except the important ones. They're not going to be solved. So somewhere along the line, we must either dedicate our lives to the perfection of these things which are necessary, or when we fall, some junk dealer will take away the old metal. We can't escape it in any other way. So Penn just made a simple statement, a statement that is very good, hard to fulfill, even difficult to imagine. And it is remarkable to say that with all the advantages of knowledge, skill, and research that we have, we haven't also generally discovered it. namely, that all efforts to advance civilization should be based upon bringing people together in peace, that understanding, non-competitive, cooperative understanding, with pure intellectual fulfillment of the realization that to work together is to live, to go and work apart from the unity for personal gain is ultimately to perish. We can live only by cooperation. By competition we die. And we have a glorified competition for profit. We must glorify cooperation for survival. If we do not do these things, the future that might possibly be a beautiful and wonderful experience is going to be destroyed by the weakness of people. Now, a lot of people recognize this weakness, and young people do. I think there are a great many young people in the world today, generations coming up, who would be very willing to make great sacrifices for a purpose, to do something that was going to really solve something, to do something that was going to pick us out of this doldrum we have fallen into. I think there are a lot of these young people who would be very interested in the Sermon on the Mount, who would like to see it done that way, who would like to have peace for themselves and their children, but do not know what to do and how to begin and where it all has to start. Well, probably one of the best working models we have of this problem is Pennsylvania. In its early days, the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, was built for the purpose of cooperation. Like all these efforts, it was a little island of peace in a great ocean of uncertainty. Today, the world is in a much more difficult situation. This little island of uncertainty must be expanded to become a world of certainties, continent after continent becoming involved in this new cooperation. The whole theory of separateness, of competitiveness, and of antagonisms must perish from the whole world, or else the world suffers for its own stupidity. We are not being destroyed by an avenging God. We are being hurt every day, being punished, because we refuse to live according to the consciousness and intelligence that has been bestowed upon us by a divine power. We have important bodies to contact the world. We have minds to contact the spheres of thought. We have spirits and souls with which to understand the causes of ourselves. These things must be used as they were intended to be used, the instruments, the workman's tools necessary for the building of the eternal empire of peace. These tools are available. They're in each one of us. They are part of the vision of life. And we have to find ways to release them. And Penn's problem was difficult in his day, as ours is now. He solved it the best that he could. We could solve a lot of it also. If we took the plan for the state of Pennsylvania that was developed and incorporated by William Penn, and our modern legislators, business people, private citizens, religionists, educators, took this particular program to heart, they might see that they were in the presence of a way by means of which most of the problems could be minimized, could be reduced, and we could begin to get together on things. The problems, the need is known to us all. There are very few people who do not know today what is necessary. But they do not feel that they can do what is necessary to bring these improvements about. They have a greater strength than they know, and Penn knew that. Each one of us can go a long way to correcting the ills of our time if we do not support them, encourage them, and believe that we profit from them. If we are willing to take a long-range look at our own society, and quietly and sincerely do what the Quakers did, simply refuse to cooperate with corruption, we would find that corruption itself would lessen very quickly. We would suffer. There would be miseries. There would be all kinds of limitations upon the privileges of the flesh. But we might arise out of this in a resurrection of the principles of human justice. We might become the very people that we were intended to be. And out of a little suffering comes a great enlightenment, a great strength. Weakness is the result of ease. While we just drift along doing nothing important, our strength is not tested and gradually fades away. But strength drawn out to support principles that are necessary, religious principles based upon the actual teachings of Christ and not theology, philosophical principles based upon the great scholars of the past, like Solon and Plato, scientific discoveries in which we find, as Lord Bacon pointed out, that we are not only searching for the world's truths, but we are also seeking a greater understanding of God and the divine principle at work in things. If we can bind the material world to the world of the Spirit, if we can find ways to make truth the governor of our conduct, then we will attain Christianity, we will attain a true democracy, and we will protect ourselves from most of the tribulations and delinquencies of the past. He gave a very good working model, a working model of a greater world, a working model of a way of life existing sincerely and basically upon integrity alone. And that he believed firmly that suffering brought out this integrity. The people who came to Pennsylvania were coming to escape persecution, sorrow, misery, offense, and even death. They came to hope for a better way of life, and they found it. Those in need today are trying to escape from the horrors of impending catastrophe. They are looking also for their city of peace, and they are willing to cooperate with a holy experiment if it is made. And this experiment must transcend all profits to individuals and make all human beings safe and sound in their existences into the unknown's future. If we can once get people to stand for principles and to realize that life is based upon great principles of integrities, if we can get them to see this, we can accomplish much. Penn got a few families, a few hundred families, maybe a few thousand together, and they saw the light and they did it. Today, we are a much greater world. We have transportation and communication beyond anything they knew. We have marvelous privileges. We have great solutions to many of the difficulties that they had to face with crude instruments. We can do it. There's no reason why the holy experiment would not work here. But it would work only when we cut through the red tape that has accumulated from intellectualism and get right back to the basic facts of things, to do that which is needed and to do that which will ultimately solve problems. Compromise cannot do it. We've got to face it as it is. Well, thank you very much, folks. There is something happening that is a further statement of my advancing years.
Everyone will please remain seated. This won't take very long.